Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Figure It, the podcast where we look at the facts and statistics on Cyprus and figure out what it all means. My name is Fiona Mullen and I'm the Director of Sapienta Economics. Last time I presented in oral form an article about the banking sector that I had first published on Substack at sapienta.substack.com. As I mentioned then, it was my way of trying to put some regular content into this podcast without killing myself with overwork on unpaid activities. That podcast was quite number heavy, so this time, to give you a bit of a break, I'm presenting my last Substack, which is about ye old Cyprob, the Cyprus problem, and there's very, very few figures in this one. Now, I find, even personally, that I totally switch off when I'm listening to something that is read out, even when it's good friends reading it, even when it's a subject I am really interested in. So in an effort to keep you awake, I'm going to try and make it a bit more chatty than the written original. So I'm probably not going to read out headings. I'm going to make little comments in between and so on and so forth to try and make it as non-soporific as possible, okay? So the title of the original article was What Citizens' Assemblies Can Do for Cyprus. And the subtitle was Piloting the Proof of Concept. I will get into what that is about in a minute. And it was published on the 9th of January 2026. So here goes. Imagine two men in a room. They are a little younger than last time, but the known knowns have not changed. Both of them want to ensure that their people will be safe long into the future. Both of them have elections to think about, and both of them have bigger powers breathing over their shoulder. Now, I didn't name those bigger powers in the article, but it's very obvious that for the Turkish Cypriots, that's Turkey, and for the Greek Cypriots, that could be anybody from Israel, Russia, UK, US, Greece, you name it, right? EU even. So for one man, let's call him Mr. Tisi, he knows that if he can get this deal over the line, his people will be considerably better off than they were beforehand and are likely to vote in favour. Why did I say that? Because multiple polls over the years have shown that Turkish Cypriots, a majority of Turkish Cypriots, would vote in favour of a solution. This is going back for the past two decades. Arguably, his biggest challenge, so Mr. Tisi, is persuading the big sponsor that it also needs to make moves. That big sponsor, of course, being Turkey. For the other man, let's call him Mr. GC, he knows that if he can get this deal over the line, he will surely win the Nobel Prize, but everything else is uncertain. All because his own side has insisted upon it, if there is a deal, and if it is endorsed in twin referendums, everything will come into force at midnight on the same day. So he will go from being the centre of attention in an internationally recognised state on referendum day to the partial centre of attention in a power-sharing, still internationally recognised state the following day. Moreover, the political parties who put him in power are biting at his heels. Remember, they always drag themselves off to Bürgerstock, Crans, Montana, Geneva, New York, you name it. They're biting at his heels, telling him not to compromise. Is he going to make that deal? Or is he going to, at best, wriggle out of it and blame the other side? Or, at worst, trash the entire show? One example of trashing the show would have been Papadopoulos back in 2004 telling everybody not to vote for the Annan Plan. So this, in my view, is the core weakness at the centre of the Cyprus problem negotiations. In its current design, the Cyprus negotiations process puts far too much of the burden on two men in a room who have elections coming and far too little on ordinary citizens. And this is despite the fact that research has shown over and over again that citizens in Cyprus are far more flexible about Cyprus problem issues than their politicians. And here I put a link to all of the research done by Haris Psaltis and his colleagues, Greek Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot colleagues. They've done a lot of research on this. So I'll try and put that link in the show notes as well. Now let's imagine a new scenario. There are two men in a room. Both of them still want to ensure that their people will be safe long into the future. Both of them still have elections to think about, and both of them still have bigger powers breathing over their shoulder. But this time, they have at their disposal proposals put forward by randomly selected citizens from both communities. This might be a single randomly selected citizens' assembly, or a set of different citizens' assemblies, each of which is given a specific tricky topic to handle. They might be citizens' assemblies on the classic core CyProp issues, quote unquote, or they might be citizens' assemblies on related issues that help the leaders reach agreement on the core issues. Let me give you an example. One randomly selected representative assembly could address the question of, quote unquote, preventive security. Now, this is a topic that's traditionally been more or less ignored at the high-level negotiations, and I know because I've been there, because the negotiating parties always end up focusing on troops and guarantees, or to put it more colloquially, guns and ammo, right? They just care about, are there going to be guarantees and how many troops are going to be here? But imagine a raft of proposals prepared by citizens which recommend a range of preventive structures designed to reduce drastically any rationale at all for outside intervention in the first place. So what do I mean? Things like early warning systems, mediation mechanisms, policing policies, you know, what would the police do perhaps in intercommunal football matches, anti-discrimination bodies to make sure that Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots are treated equally in the workplace and in public sector jobs and so on. Even street lighting, to ensure that people feel safe in certain areas. And all of this, apart from the street lighting part, which is a gender-related question, really, this was proposed by the Centre for Sustainable Peace and Democratic Development, SEED for short. They published some proposals like this back in 2017, and I think they were actually proposed, but unfortunately rather late in the day to the sides in the run-up to Crans-Montana. So that's one version. Preventive security. Another could handle a question of whether or not the new state of affairs should come into force at midnight on the day of the twin referendums, so the Big Bang approach, or whether it should be a step-by-step approach, where the two sides gradually get to know each other, gradually get to trust each other, and then have another vote, perhaps in 10 years' time, where they decide the final state of affairs. Now, like I mentioned, the Greek Cypriots have traditionally rejected a step-by-step approach. And the reason for this is that they are afraid that it will constitute recognition of a secessionist entity, namely the unrecognised, quote-unquote, Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus. But if a randomly selected citizens' assembly comprising voters in both communities proposes this, and maybe even, I didn't put this in the article, but maybe even if that's endorsed in a referendum, or in parliament, or some other form of democratic vote, it could give democratic legitimacy to move away from this current Big Bang approach. Because the problem with the Big Bang approach is that it raises the bar for success so high that the Cyprus problem remains unresolved. And yet the world as we knew it is falling to pieces around us, with who knows what consequences for this small island. And that really does mean that finding ways to do differently and finding a way to end this Cyprus problem is a really urgent matter, because we honestly don't know what and who we can rely on anymore. We are quite vulnerable in this little island, in this vulnerable corner of the world, right? So we need to find a different way of solving this. Another option is an assembly of the internally displaced. They're known as refugees in Cyprus problem parlance. They could be tasked with another question, which again has not been dealt with in detail at the high level of negotiations, namely how to run an exchange, quote unquote, program. This is where dispossessed owners opt to exchange their property for another property, or how to incentivize a smooth and rapid property settlement process. For example, you could use mass claims procedures, you could use modern technology to speed things up, and so on. So they don't necessarily decide the basis under which somebody gets their property back or not, but what they can do is help us on process, right? And then, of course, a bolder project, but one which I get it that no one at the moment is really quite ready for it, even in some cases among, let's say, the traditional pro-peace community, would be to put all of the Guterres framework questions to one or more citizens' assemblies. So this would include all those big questions like how political equality is expressed in practice, how much territory forms part of the Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot constituent states, how property reinstatement, exchange or compensation is handled, meaning, you know, what are the criteria for exchange, compensation or reinstatement, the free movement of goods and persons. If you remember, the Guterres framework had something about the rights of Turkish nationals. And of course, the biggie, future of unilateral intervention, rights, the guarantees and troops. Now, for the time being, political leaders seemed keen to keep these classic Cyprus problem questions to themselves. Fair enough. I get it. Cyprus is a young democracy. It's difficult to jump from top down to something like that. But what I do think is, if we ask citizens to deliberate jointly on related questions, which could help them walk that final mile on the big questions, it would still be a considerable improvement on the current top-down, big bang, bound-to-fail process, right? So whatever happens, we really need to change the way the process is conducted to lower that bar for success and make sure the leaders are properly supported when making difficult decisions. So this isn't about taking power away from leaders. It's about empowering them, in a sense, because they will have the support of citizens behind them. So this is why I'm really happy that the EU is now funding what's called the Updated Cyprus Peace Process Design, CUP. It's a new project led by the Cyprus Peace and Dialogue Centre, CPDC, in partnership with the Interdisciplinary Centre for Law, Alternative and Innovative Methods, called ICLAIM. It's part of the UCLAN University in Pilar. And CUP is a term that I coined back in May 2024 when Meltem, the head of CPDC, Meltem Onurkan Samani, and I launched the sort of idea, the first idea of the concept at Liege Palace, and said, look, how about trying to change the process and doing it this way? And we've been working ever since on trying to gain traction for this idea. So I'm really happy that the EU is now funding it. So a key aim of the CUP, the EU-funded project, is to pilot citizens' assemblies that focus not on the substantive big questions, for all the reasons I mentioned above, but on negotiations process design. So how can we ensure that the negotiations process is designed for success and responsive to voters' expectations in the 21st century? And as Meltem noted at the launch in December, if this time is to be different, which is what the Secretary General said maybe a couple of years ago, then the process itself must be different. And I hope to be able to write and speak more on this topic in the coming months as the EU project develops. Now, you might be sceptical about the Cyprus problem, but there's a pressing need for democracies to engage voters anyway. Look at the shocking lack of trust in politicians and governments. The latest Eurobarometer survey, published in December 2025, so just a month ago, showed that an astonishing 87% of Greek Cypriots tend not to trust political parties. So 87% do not trust their political parties, and we have a parliamentary election coming in May, right? And in the Turkish Cypriot community, it's a little bit better, but still 48% do not trust their political parties, okay? And then you look at trust in government, 63% of Greek Cypriots don't trust their government. You don't get an equivalent question in the north because, presumably for recognition issues, they weren't allowed to ask it. But we know that the EU average is also 63% for not trusting government. So it's pretty universal. Maybe it's a little bit less not non-trusting based on the political parties for the north, but it's pretty bad all round. And this is why we see the rise of populist parties. They feel disconnected from their politicians. And this is why we risk sliding into authoritarianism, because the populist parties getting into power realise they can't deliver what they've promised, and so they slide into authoritarianism, and we're seeing that every day. And another reason why I believe in citizens' assemblies is because of my personal experience with them in December 2024. So this was a project, again with CPDC, the UNDP funded it. We didn't do Cyprus problem issues, we did what were called mini assemblies, because full assemblies would cost millions and millions, right? But mini assemblies on the subject of energy transition. So in a citizens' assembly, you have to inform the people who are going to be deliberating about the subject. So they were given information about energy transition, and the basic bottom line was, look, whether we like it or not, electric cars are coming because all the people we import them from will stop making them after a certain period. And at the moment, all the benefits of electric cars and photovoltaics are accruing to people with the cash to buy electric cars and with the cash to buy photovoltaics, right? So how do we make sure that the guy with his diesel-run Diplocambino living in the rural area and coming into town to do our plumbing or whatever is not going to be left out by this energy transition, is not going to be punished somehow for not having the cash to get in on the game? So what they were asked to do was imagine that they had been asked by their authorities to come up with proposals. And the most striking thing for me was how engaged the ordinary voter participants were. Even when the proposition was pretend your authorities are asking for proposals from you and that they will act on your proposals, they were still really grateful that their voices were heard, you know, in a proper way, not just on Facebook sort of thing. So if you're sceptical about the capacity of citizens' assemblies to solve the Cyprus problem, I really urge you at least have a think about giving assemblies a chance to save us more generally from the terrors of populism, which slide into authoritarianism, which slide into tyranny. That's why we need them. That's it from me. If you want to support the costs of keeping Island Talks going, it costs money, websites, subscriptions, this, that and the other, go to supportus@islandtalks.fm. And thank you for listening.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.